It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, celebrities are stepping in to endorse their favorite presidential candidates, but does it matter? Our guest weighs the impact of celebrity endorsements on the political process.
First, an international advocate working to end violence against women has been traveling through Northeast Wisconsin this last week.
As college students navigate their way through the fall semester, sexual assault is still a huge issue on campuses. A large new survey from the Association of American Universities asked students at 27 campuses about sexual misconduct. The responses showed that 1 in 5 students experienced non-consensual sexual contact. 1/3 of the women who took the survey said they had been sexually assaulted while in school, including threats by coercion or lack of affirmative consent.
Joe Samelin has been traveling to campuses in Northeast Wisconsin to talk about sexual violence on campus, and he's here to talk about his work in the state. He's a senior program manager for Breakthrough, a global human rights organization working to end violence against women and girls. Joe, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much, Veronica and Rob. We're excited to be here in Wisconsin for all the events we're participating in and with you all at WPR as well, especially since you've been given so much time to this issue. So we appreciate that, and best of luck with big numbers for the drive this week.
Well, thank you so much, and we're glad to have you on. Now, tell us a little bit about the work you've been doing in Wisconsin.
Sure. So, you know, we've been working for, I'd say, over a year now with Green Bay Packer fans on the issue of street harassment of women and girls. And starting last year, that led to relationships with St. Norbert College. And we're working with Greeks there, fraternity and sorority folks, and in talks now with Lawrence University and UW Oshkosh as well, about bringing our Campus Catalyst program, working with fraternity and sorority folks to really change the culture around sexual violence on their campuses and beyond.
Now, your work is centered around the culture around sexual assault. First of all, can you describe the culture that you're talking about?
Sure. What the heck is culture anyway? Great question. You know, culture, big picture, is kind of who and what we are as individuals, as families and communities. It's everything around us. And Breakthrough's take on this is that, unfortunately, culture is now and always has violence against women and girls is very much an integral part of our culture. It's, you know, our language, our attitudes, our behaviors, and the violence that's around us. And so our mission, big picture, and in terms of campus sexual violence specifically, is to work with communities and schools to understand that fact, that it is a part of our culture, and then to do something about it. That's our work, is to help individuals and communities really take concrete action to transform those harmful parts of culture that allow such high levels of sexual violence as we just heard to happen on college campuses or anywhere.
Now, the culture that you're talking about, is that something that most of the people that you're working with in the Greek system and elsewhere in college campuses, is it something that people sort of nod their head and say, okay, I know what you're talking about? Or is it something that is sort of a baseline presence that can be so persistent that sometimes it doesn't get noticed?
I think it's both, although in my experience doing this work for a decade and a half, it's more the latter than the former. So one example, just to get concrete, to help folks understand, a question that we ask a lot in our work is, what does it mean to be a man, right? We talk about women and femininity as well, but the question of what it means to be a man when so much violence is unfortunately committed by men, what messages do we get about being a man in America? What messages online or from movies or from our churches or schools? You know, how is being a man different in Wisconsin as opposed to New York City, or Appleton as opposed to Green Bay, et cetera? And, you know, what about the pressures of what it means to be a certain kind of man can then lead to and contribute to individuals choosing to commit sexual violence or not, to intervene if they see something going on that doesn't seem right or not, to believe survivors and victims when they say they were assaulted or not. So some folks kind of get it right away, and for some folks it is kind of like a fish in water. You don't really notice that it's all around you, and our job is to just work with communities to get a critical mass of people to the point where they recognize it and can take action on it.
So you're leading these conversations. I'm curious, what kind of things do people tell you about what it means to be a man and whether or not that contributes to pressures that may lead to sexual assault?
I think there are some things that are kind of general and generic across America as a whole, and I've done work everywhere from Hawaii to the Midwest to New York City, where I'm from, and now happy to be in Wisconsin, et cetera. Some of the conversations here in Wisconsin have been kind of the ones we talk about in terms of pressures on especially college-age young men to be having sex, and often to be having lots of sex, right? And very often that's kind of like unwritten pressure, and it's unspoken rules. It's just kind of the assumption. And we find that when the conversation is brought out to the open and the questions are simply even just asked, it gives people the agency to really say, wow, okay, where did I get that message, and do I actually agree with it? In Wisconsin, we've been having great conversations about the culture here and on different campuses so far, and what role does drinking and alcohol play in Wisconsin as opposed to anywhere else and on different campuses, and everything from hunting to football. So we really have a lot of conversations. And to be clear, we're not saying that to be a man or some of these things that are typical or stereotypical masculinity things are negative in and of themselves, but we just want to help folks bring a critical lens to the life we live and to the culture that we live in.
We're talking right now to Joe Samelin from Breakthrough about his work in Wisconsin to end sexual violence on college campuses. And so, Joe, once you've had these conversations and there's sort of a self-awareness going on, what is the next step to moving forward in a positive way and getting some of the men that you work with on these campuses to be the responsible party in that they're shouldering some of the burden for what's happening there?
That's a great point, especially that last one, just to speak to it for a second. You know, when the rest of us who haven't been directly affected by sexual violence or sexual assault don't do more to really address the issue and the issue, we're leaving it to survivors and victims to do all of the work, and that's, put it mildly, that's unfair. We think that's really not okay, and so it's on all of us to do so. And so, you know, a lot of the work we do is around action, and specifically the trainings and support that we give to Greek students, and that's fraternity men as well as sorority women, just to put it out there. We work with everyone in the Greek community on the campus and nationally. Then the goal is action. We work with them to identify what component of culture on their campus or in Greek life where they are do they feel is most prevalent and harmful, whether that is blaming victims and not believing victims of sexual assault, whether it's the lack of a solid policy on campus, or maybe there's great resources for victims but nobody knows about them, to take concrete action. So one quick example with some of the folks we're working with at Indiana University, you know, they saw earlier this semester at Old Dominion University, one of the fraternity chapters there hung up, which are not, unfortunately, uncommon things to see, but signs with messages such as, and you discussed this in an earlier segment, drop your daughters off here, meaning the freshman female students on campus. And so at Indiana University, they had the idea of maybe hanging up a sign on one of their fraternity houses, a banner that kind of gives positive messages countering that kind of thinking. Well, we worked with them, and after discussion, they decided to approach the Greek Council of Presidents on campus, and now all 21 fraternity houses on campus at Indiana University in Bloomington are going to be hanging positive messages about ending rape for the entire month of October. Mm. So that's what we talk about. When we say culture change, we're talking big and public-facing. And, you know, if you walk down Greek Row for this month, you're gonna do a double take at seeing the messages that fraternity men are putting out there to the campus.
Yeah, what kind of messages? What do they say?
It ranges from simple messages supporting the services that exist, so supporting sexual assault services on campus, as well as some of the student groups that address preventing and responding to sexual violence and sexual assault, like MARS, Men Against Rape and Sexual Assault, as well as the Safe Sisters program there. But it's also a call to other Greeks. So some of the banners say, as Greeks, we can do better. Some of the banners say that real Hoosiers respect women. So there's a lot of kind of community-specific and cultural-specific messaging. But we work with the students to tailor messages that would minimize triggering or traumatizing survivors of sexual violence on campus, and also ones that didn't come from a defensive place, but from a place of let's all work together, we can all do more to end sexual violence here.
We're talking to Joe Samelin right now from Breakthrough about his work to end sexual violence on college campuses in Wisconsin.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. As a college student, past or present, what is or was the environment like, the culture like, when it came to issues of sexual assault on that campus? As a young man or a young woman on or off campus, what questions do you have? What ideas do you have on changing this culture?
We're picking up our discussion now with Joe Samelin from Breakthrough, an international human rights organization. We're talking about his work in Wisconsin. He's been traveling to college campuses in northeast Wisconsin to work on preventing sexual assault.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think would help prevent sexual assault on campuses and off campuses, for that matter? How can men be included in the effort to stop sexual harassment and sexual assault? Call now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We go to our callers now. We have Paul with us in Milwaukee. Paul, hi.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. What do you think about all this?
Well, I'm a high school health teacher in Milwaukee, and the topic is very serious for us. And what we lack is a consistent program where experts come in and work with us, teaching the kids on the knowledge and the skills necessary for awareness and prevention on this very topic. And I just wanted to hear from your presenter, what are you working off campus with high schools or community youth programs that are dealing with these topics?
Great. Thank you, Paul. And Joe, what do you think? Have you been working with high schools and colleges and off campus?
Yeah, personally, I've been doing a lot of work with high schools and middle schools as well in New York and nationally for a long time. And Breakthrough does a number of different programs that can be for any type of community in any age group. There are a lot of resources out there, and unfortunately, they can be kind of hard to find or navigate sometimes in terms of having these discussions. So I hear you on that, Paul, and appreciate the question. But I think one of the pieces that can help with that search for programming is really to look at the resources that you have at the school. Do you have folks that can be trained to have these discussions? Should it be bringing in outside experts to come in? And is it just more informal conversations and starting that discussion at the simpler levels around culture, around some of these issues, as you look for kind of the long-term sustainable programming? Because it could sometimes build to that. So sorry that I don't have a here's the number, and here's the website to find a specific program that's going to work for your school. But we're happy to talk more about what might be a good fit for that. And I think the key to all of this is really just folks like you, the health teachers, the librarians, just everybody out there who takes this issue seriously, especially when working with young folks, to really be proactive in it. So really appreciate that you're trying to do that.
Paul, thank you so much. And we're going to go next to Christy. Christy joins us from Janesville. Christy, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
So I was wondering, and I appreciate the speaker's organization's work with Greeks and with fraternities, specifically having men be a piece of this advocacy and a piece of this outreach. And I wondered if the organization had done any work with athletic departments on college campuses, either here in Wisconsin or around the country, and how that work was going.
Great. Thank you, Christy. Joe?
Yeah, Breakthrough does a lot of work with sports fans and around sports in general. There's campaigns that we've done as well as ongoing programming in Wisconsin and elsewhere. So in addition to that, we have programming that we can absolutely do with specific teams, et cetera, to help address that same kind of culture. The language and the conversation might be a little bit different in terms of how we talk about the culture in these issues, Greek community versus athletic community versus honors society versus chess team versus, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of the core conversations are the same. So we do have trainings and programs available for a diverse group, diverse communities within a campus, as well as communities outside campuses, too. Part of our work focusing on culture and culture change allows us to see the connections between different communities and also different types of violence. So again, some of our programming addresses campus sexual violence, but some of it also addresses violence against women in pop culture, as well as street harassment of women and girls, domestic violence and dating violence, and more. So hope that's helpful, Christy.
Joe, as we get ready to wrap up here, I'm curious about your personal story. You're a man who's working with other men to raise awareness and end violence on college campuses against women and girls. How did you get interested in this, and is there something of your story that could be used and applied to help other men take a more active role?
Yes. Yes, there is, and I'm happy to share just a little bit. You know, Breakthrough's approach is that we need everyone on board. We call that the Breakthrough Generation. So invite everyone to come take a look at our website and see what we do and be part of the Breakthrough Generation. I think the number one question that men who care about this issue and work on this issue, whether it's volunteer or professional for a living like myself, the number one question we get is, why do you do this? Why do you care? Like, you know, why is it important to you? And it's an important question exactly for the reason you said, because understanding it will help us get more guys to care about this issue and take action on it. That said, it's also still a bit of a bittersweet question, because it still shows that men addressing this issue in any way, shape, or form, let alone doing something about it, is still kind of the rarity and not the norm. We're working towards that, and things have changed a lot in that regard in the last 10 years. And Breakthrough does a lot of programming that to engage men in communities. Personally, for me, you know, we'll be participating. I'll be a guest speaker at the Take Back the Night event in Oshkosh coming up this Wednesday. Mm-hmm. The Fox Valley Take Back the Night event, and you can check that out online for more information. One of the reasons, like my first aha moments about this issue personally, came from when I was an undergrad student and I attended my first Take Back the Night my second year on campus. Part of that event was being in a room in the student union with about 400 students, most of them female, and over 3 or 4 hours throughout the night, almost every single one of those women went up to the mic to share a story of being a survivor of sexual assault, of child sexual abuse, of teen dating violence, of, you know, daily street harassment, et cetera. And for me, even though I'd kind of been learning about the issue a little bit up until that point, that was a moment for me. That was a hard room to be in, to mm-hmm. hear those stories. And I took breaks throughout those 3 to 4 hours and stepped outside for a bit. But that was really where it really sunk in for me, that it was a personal issue.
And Joe, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for sharing all that with us. I really appreciate that. That was Joe Samelin, Senior Program Manager for Breakthrough, a global human rights organization working to make violence against women and girls unacceptable.
Candidates are jockeying for position in the 2016 presidential race, and they're lining up supporters to help pay for their campaigns and to bolster their credibility.
One way to increase visibility and reach out to voters is to recruit celebrities to endorse a candidate. But do those endorsements translate into votes?
Joining us now to talk about whether celebrity endorsements are valuable is Jennifer Brubaker. She's an associate professor in the Communication Studies Department at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Jennifer, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, this isn't a new thing, is it? Celebrities have been making political endorsements for, I don't know, how long?
Well, for decades, Hollywood celebrities and Washington insiders have traveled in the same circles, and celebrities have taken to endorsing political candidates. In the 19th century, the two overlapped because political leaders were the only people who actually were really famous. They themselves were the celebrities. You know, for the most of the 20th century, though, celebrities were involved in politics, but it was primarily more ceremonial or decorative. The political issues themselves, you know, things like wars and McCarthyism, civil rights, they overshadowed the celebrities' participation. But now it's been in the last couple of decades that we've really seen celebrities become much more visible in the political spotlight, endorsing candidates themselves.
Yeah, we live in a celebrity culture, people say, and is that reflected in our political world?
Definitely. We are in a highly celebrity-entranced culture. Everything we do, whether it's products that we buy, stores that we shop at, restaurants that we eat at, programs that we watch, it's all we do it because of celebrity oftentimes. Young people, namely, and most of my research focuses on college-age students, but people in general, you know, we're following celebrities every day. We're following every aspect of their lives. We're liking their pictures. We're sharing their tweets. We're following their everyday activities. And so we have become very focused on what celebrities do and what they say.
Well, but there's the big question. If celebrity X endorses a candidate, we've seen a ton endorse Bernie Sanders, some Donald Trump, and a variety of other candidates, but is there an impact? Does it sway somebody's vote to know that famous actor endorsed the candidate?
Well, we know a decent amount about celebrity endorsements in general. Primarily what we know comes from consumer products. Celebrities are so frequently believed to be influential enough that we pay them to endorse our products. because if a celebrity's paid support translates into us purchasing their products, then it's very logical to infer that political endorsements, when you have no direct financial incentive to the celebrity, are also going to be influential. You know, you can look at, this isn't anything new, but you can definitely look in the last couple of election cycles, looking at Oprah Winfrey and looking at, you know, she made her fortune in a TV show that through that TV show, simply by choosing an Oprah book club, she increased the sales of a 130-year-old novel by 5,000+%. You know, so by translating that into what she did to support President Obama back in 2008 and draw voters and draw people out to the polls, that, you know, that direct impact of that is substantial. Now, unfortunately, beyond that type of impact and that type of research, research hasn't gone much farther. We don't know a lot about the impact of celebrity endorsements. Primarily, this is due to the lack of an appropriate measure to determine the endorsement impact.
Well, I want to jump in and give a listen to Oprah. You mentioned here she is speaking on Barack Obama's behalf back in December of 2007.
I not only care about this country, but there are times that I even worry about what happens to our country. And that is why, for the very first time in my life, I feel compelled to stand up and to speak out for the man who I believe has a new vision for America.
That man was Barack Obama. I mean, is this something special? Oprah maybe has a special impact on the culture that a lot of other celebrities might not.
That's true. She does. And I mean, it translated into, you know, well over 1 million votes for Obama is what it was estimated to have, which is substantial. But when we look at more typical everyday kind of celebrities, they still are making us look at and saying, you know, it's probably, you know, my research focuses on looking at it through the lens of third person effect, which is the idea that a persuasive message may not, you know, that message isn't going to affect me, but it's going to affect them, that third person. You know, you might not fall for it, and I might not fall for it because we know what's going on. But those other people out there, that third person, they might be persuaded by it. And so when we live in such a celebrity and trans culture, it's very likely that those celebrities, no matter how big of a name they are, they might have a little effect. And especially when you add those cumulative endorsements on, now you've got one person endorsing and another person endorsing and another person endorsing. And we do take those messages into consideration.
Talking to Jennifer Brubaker from the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, about celebrity endorsements and the impact they do or don't have on something like a 2016 presidential race. I wonder if sometimes these things can have a negative effect, Jennifer, if you've had Barbara Streisand out endorsing you and then she says something that raises some hackles, or Ted Nugent played you onto the stage and then says something outrageous later on. Does that hurt a candidate and make them have to clarify where they agree or disagree with their celebrity supporter?
That is definitely a risk that you take when you have an endorsement. You know, existing research does show that even unpopular statements made by celebrities become much more palatable, that if we like a celebrity and if we look at them through this positive lens, that we tend to see even negative statements in a more positive light. Unfortunately, sometimes when there are larger issues or larger scandals or, you know, comments that are made in direct conflict with what a candidate stands for, that can have a negative impact on that candidate, which is why sometimes you will see that happen, where a candidate starts to try to distance themselves a little bit from an endorsement. And, you know, but you really, endorsements are good to have because if nothing else, they do bring with them the financial backing of the candidate or of the celebrity, as well as their large celebrity network. You know, they all celebrities have these big social networks. And when one celebrity endorses a candidate, oftentimes the people in their social networks of celebrities are also endorsing them. And that can bring about it a certain degree of financial security with it, which is what candidates need. It also brings credibility to that candidate, because the more visibility we get, the more visibility that these candidates are getting in the media makes them a more likely candidate, makes them a more viable candidate because they're being seen in the media. And especially when you see something like we're seeing currently, when there's such a huge assortment of political candidates in this 2016 race, when you're just one in a sea of candidates, to have something that makes you stand out, something that makes you different, it garners media attention. And more media attention makes you a more viable candidate in the eyes of the voters. The ones who don't get that media attention, they're the ones who cease to exist in our minds. They're not there because we're not seeing them. So celebrities at least are drawing that out.
And Jennifer, before we let you go, we've heard what's in it for the politicians, the impact on voters. What about the celebrities? Why are we seeing more of them do this sort of thing? What do they get out of it?
Well, they definitely, you know, it gives them a sense of civic duty. It gives them a sense of activism. You know, we tend to see a lot of celebrities, especially supporting the Democratic Party. You know, there's theories that, you know, it's possibly due to this privileged celebrity status that provides them with a sense of guilt to embrace these causes that are on the left and these candidates that are on the left. You know, on one side, we have a certain degree of condemnation. You know, we shower these celebrities with adoration. We spend so much time distracted from important issues, following them, watching them. But on the other hand, we have a lot of adoration for them. You know, they help legitimize these causes. So while they are flying off in jets to support an environmental save the environment thing, we're looking at it saying, well, we condemn them for part of it, but we adore them for the other part of it. And that adoration is what gives them this sense of activism. And it makes them more than just a catchphrase or more than just a pretty face we see in the movies. It gives them a different level of status.
Jennifer, thanks so much. And stay dry out there in North Carolina.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That's Jennifer Brubaker, associate professor in the Communication Studies Department at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, talking about the impact of celebrity endorsements on political campaigns.